This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
I absolutely condemned that email exchange, and that person is no longer working for the DNC.
Ousted DNC Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz gives in and sits down for her first debate with her well-funded opponent, Tim Canova.
You're less a candidate than you are a revenge cycle for Bernie Sanders.
I don't see that at all. You know, if I had a different kind of politics, I would not get this kind of support nationwide that I have.
How is Donald Trump's campaign impacting other Republicans down the ballot? Political writer Ryan Ray says it will be huge.
I hate to be glib, the Trump effect is really reverberating everywhere.
And who's up for a game of musical chairs? It appears to be the candidates for Leon County Sheriff.
I have never seen a race in all my years of covering politics where three of the four candidates switch parties at the last minute. It doesn't smell right to me.
Steve Bosquet with the Tampa Bay Times Capital Bureau is here to discuss some of the oddities in local races. All that and more coming up on episode 72 of The Rotunda. How is everyone holding up? We're almost to the finish line, just a few more weeks, 84 days from this episode's release until the 2016 presidential election. My new hobby seems to be counseling friends that are new to keeping track of politics to step away, take a break from all the back and forth. It can be quite toxic. Actually, I also tell them to take this opportunity to focus in on the local races. There is the August 30th primary election. There is plenty of voting to do, people. I know if you're listening to this program, you already know this. But remind your friends. Give them an outlet. Tell them to get off social media and go for a beer. Leave the phone behind.
Yeah, nothing says authenticity quite like the smell of both vomit and cigarettes commingling.
I'm not too much of a fan with the cigarettes, but I can hang.
Don't smoke, kids. Lawton Childs and Bob Butterworth were right. It's a bad idea.
Actually, I figured I should do the same, and I met up with a good friend, Ryan Ray, who writes about Florida politics.
Why do you like this bar so much? Why did you bring me to Leon Pump?
Oh, it's because it's classic Tallahassee, man. I mean, again, first, like we discussed earlier, one of the first things I like about Leon Pump is it's away from Adam Street, a little way. It's got a nice vibe.
Definitely. We see people around us, the guards, grabbing a few beers, sitting on the couch, spilling beer. So, Ryan Ray, we're just going around with all the different hot topics going on here. I'm now, after we just came out of the Democratic National Convention, the big mess with Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Right.
What do you make of what's happening to her? She actually just said that she will participate in a debate with Tim Canova.
Right.
That's 360.
But I think that's a positive sign. I think in spite of the really deep-seated simmering problems between the sort of left and the more liberal or center wing of the Democratic Party that recent events have exposed, I think it's, and there are significant reasons, and I think that going forward, the Democratic Party as it's currently constituted is sort of a losing proposition when it comes to reaching out to young people. And I think that the political economy of the Democratic Party is going to have to move left, in order to maintain those votes.
All right, later we'll go deeper into Ryan's assessment. But first, let's catch that debate that most thought would never happen.
Wasserman Schultz is seeking her seventh term with the backing of President Obama and the Democratic presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton. While Canova is a first-time candidate and law professor supported by Bernie Sanders and his legion of followers who have pumped millions into his campaign. At stake, Florida's 23rd Congressional District.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz was riding high going into the Democratic National Convention until WikiLeaks exposed emails that ultimately forced her off the national stage. She lost her position at the DNC after emails showed that the party favored Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. The shakeup has given a welcome boost to her primary challenger, who has long called for a debate as she refused. But times have changed. Here they are on Facing South Florida, a CBS 4 program hosted by Jim DeFede.
Not only have I condemned the exchange in that email, I mean, I share Bernie Sanders' faith and would never condone anyone suggesting that we question or strategize about questioning someone's faith. In fact, in that email exchange, a staffer apparently specifically said that they knew the chairwoman would not be okay with that, which I absolutely wouldn't have been. So I absolutely condemn and condemned that email exchange, and that person is no longer working for the DNC.
Well, what does it say that they were able to do that? That they would even feel free enough to send an email like that? Well, is that the culture you created there?
Of course not. Look.
Defeated didn't give time limits on responses, and immediately, you could tell that was a bad move. He lost control several times as both candidates asserted their wish to finish their statements. Here's Wasserman Schultz responding to a question about using DNC resources to monitor Canova's campaign.
At the end of the day, there were not only no rules broken, but that type of intangible effort on the part of a political... Let me finish my answer, please, because you asked a question and you need this answer. That type of intangible, incidental activity is completely legal. It follows our rules, and there was absolutely no violation of the rules or the law.
Professor Canova, I'll give you a chance to respond now.
Defeated then struggles to dig into Canova's background.
You've only lived in this district since 2012?
Well, I've lived in South Florida since the mid-1990s.
Excuse me.
I moved down here in the mid-1990s for a teaching job at the University of Miami. I've lived in South Florida for a total of 7 years. My family has been down in South Florida for decades, and I've been visiting for many years. I'd like to know how many years somebody has to be living in this district or in South Florida to be considered a Floridian.
Well, let me ask you this. You've only registered as a Democrat in the last year. You're running for the Democratic primary in this case. Why have you only joined the party in less than 12 months?
If I may correct you, I'll say this. I've been a registered Democrat for longer than Debbie Wasserman Schultz has. I was working on Capitol Hill for Paul Tsongas, the late U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, as a legislative aide when my opponent was still in high school. I've been a registered Democrat for more years. It is true that I registered independent for one election cycle. And quite frankly, it was from dissatisfaction with this Democratic Party. The Congresswoman has spoken for a while.
All right, you see how important setting those time limits are? But in CBS4's defense, they had to adjust to the demands of both campaigns, even up to the last few minutes. Defeated did get a gotcha moment.
I just want to ask you how well you know this district. Do you know who the mayor of Southwest Ranches is?
I'm not going to play that game. No, I do not. And I'm not going to play that game. I do know that Southwest Ranches was the site of
it's
a proposed...
Jeff Nelson, by the way.
Very good. Thank
He's
you very much.
He's also the assistant principal of Cypress Bay High School.
I do know who my students are at Nova Southeastern University.
That's just a brief snippet of the first debate between Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her primary challenger, Tim Canova. Catch the full debate on the CBS Miami's website. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. All right, let's get back to beer and politics with Florida politics writer Ryan Ray. We're hanging out at the Leon Pub in Midtown Tallahassee.
You know, I've seen a lot of popular journalism about how we quirky millennials are abjuring all of these traditional pleasures and living with their parents longer and sleeping around less and all these sorts of idiosyncratic
things.
it's out there. It's out there. Check it out. Check out Vox and BuzzFeed and all of our millennial sources of information. But people are kind of trying to look for a unified theory of the millennial and how to explain these behaviors. But the fact is, we're just poor. We just have less money. We can't, just graduate high school or even college at this point and just expect to be able to buy a house. That's a lot different for us.
Florida, the giant battleground state where many are counting on and expecting our millennials to sway the presidential election. Who are millennials anyway? Count yourself in if you were born between 1982 and 2000. That's according to the U.S. Census. I'm a millennial, and Ryan is one too. And along with some 83 million others like us, we outnumber baby boomers.
When you're talking about the youth vote, so to speak, you have to contend with the Bernie Sanders phenomenon, and I think with contemporary Democratic politics more broadly. As you know, Bernie Sanders took about 70% of the vote in the Democratic primaries among people that were 30 and younger, which is, you know, several hundred thousand more than Hillary Clinton got, and maybe perhaps a million, and considerably more than the margin that Barack Obama won against Hillary Clinton in 2008.
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of a considerable locus of where the energy of youth politics is at. And so I think it's useful to take a step back and look at how that happened and what's going on with people roughly in my cohort.
Here in Florida, we have about 4.4 million registered Republicans and 4.6 million Democrats. And both parties are fighting over nearly 3 million independents. That could put the biggest swing in this swing state. But this election is so up in the air. Unusual. No one's following pattern. People are switching parties left and right, well, mostly from right to left. Republican strongholds are seeing grips loosened, and those are some of the things we'll be tackling as we head into November, right here on this program.
They don't even want to touch Trump, the party, the Republican Party of Florida. Because I was working an interview request during the RNC, and you could tell, like, the enthusiasm wasn't there. It's more tolerating. And I got from a really good source that that was probably the case. So how do you feel about what the Republican Party is going through?
Well, I wouldn't want to touch that either if I were them. But I mean, what we're looking at is the sort of, you know, the sort of business establishment Republicans who have always run the show were able to keep your I don't know how to say, your Trump-flavored Republicans, your, frankly, your sort of almost nihilist, kind of nativist sort of Republicans. They've been able to string them along and keep them at bay. And now that wing of the party has finally got their guy, and they're kind of like the dog that finally caught the car. You know, and they've got the reins. The presidential ticket of their party is all theirs, and I'm not sure that they know what to do with it. Your sort of traditional conservatives that believe in governing and believe that government can be something that helps that furthers the public good are finding themselves more and more isolated and finding themselves in a very difficult position.
Looking down ticket, how will this impact those who are running for office statewide, Republicans? I guess it's bad for them if they align themselves with Trump and facing the Never Trump movement, or will people be so turned off, even Republicans, that they won't look down ticket? It's Never Trump, and they'll skip and, I don't know, even jump over to the Democratic Party. But what do you think?
Well, when I talk to politics people,
like yourself,
it used to be in a past life. Of course, I have no political opinion now. It was ambiguous when they would talk about the down ballot effect of Trump. We had never seen anything like this before. It's this very idiosyncratic, sort of unprecedented phenomenon that we've never seen, so who knows, right? Now I think that's different. I think people are sort of universally more or less come over to the fact that it's going to hurt Republican performance.
Special thanks to Ryan Ray. It's always a pleasure to catch up for beer, and it was great to have him here on the pod. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. This program is about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. If you have yet to do so, remember to visit rotundapodcast.com. You can support this program with a financial contribution by clicking Donate, top right-hand corner of our website. You can join our corporate partners by sponsoring this program. Remember to chime in on social media at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter or find us on Facebook. And as always, thanks for your support. You know, it's about time to focus on some of the local races. In fact, I'd like to hear about all of the unique races to watch in your neck of the woods. I want to hear about the oddities, the record breakers, the ones that for some reason are just wacky or exciting to watch. Shoot me a note. Hit me up on social media. I'll start things off with the sheriff's race for Leon County, Florida. We were in for a pretty nasty primary battle on August 30th until three of the four candidates upped and switched parties. Yes, sending them straight to the November ballot in a four-way race. They were all present at a recent debate at the Capital City Tiger Bay Club, moderated by Tampa Bay Times Capital Bureau Chief Steve Basquet.
But we start at the beginning. You know, I've covered politics in the state since the 1980s, and I thought I'd seen everything until the candidate qualifying deadline for sheriff of Leon County. Just to recap, three of you switched your party affiliations right before the qualifying deadline. Tommy Mills from Democratic to no party affiliation. Sheriff Mike Wood from Democrat to no party affiliation. Charlie Strickland from no party affiliation to Republican. Legal, but it's been described in the pages of our local newspaper as expediency, gamesmanship, and worse. We're going to begin here with Tommy Mills. Why switch if not for pure political advantage?
The audio quality isn't as good to capture their responses, but Tommy Mills said he switched from Democrat to NPA so everybody can vote, blaming Florida's closed primary system. Charlie Strickland says he switched from NPA to Republican after noticing the others abandoned their base. He went back to being a Republican because he sees an opportunity to be the first conservative sheriff in at least 100 years in Leon County. Sheriff Mike Wood says it was a simple strategy after seeing a switch in the ninth hour, and Walt McNeil says he's the only candidate that has been consistent and remained in his own party. Anyway, Capital Tiger Bay is always a great place for civic engagement. Plus, their lunch meetings are deliciously good. Fried chicken, mashed potatoes, sweet tea, desserts. All the southern comfort food you can think of. I caught up with Steve Basquet after the debate.
Yeah, you just finished moderating the Leon County Sheriff's Race. Why is this race intriguing to you?
I live in this community. I like this community. I love living here. I put two kids through school, and my wife and I have in Tallahassee. This is the most important political position in a county where you don't have a strong mayor for the entire county. I've covered politics all over the state for a long time, and it's one of the oddities about Florida politics that everybody knows and cares who the sheriff is. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly the case in Leon County.
So why should other communities care about this race here? What's unique here?
Oh, what's unique here, I think, would be the fact that we're the state capital, and the fact that, especially this time of year, Trammell, we've got parents, moms and dads all over the state and beyond who are dropping their kids off at FSU, or Florida A&M, or Tallahassee College, and they hope that their kids are safe. This is one of the biggest university communities in the country, and we've got kids from all over the state and the United States here, and it's important that parents go to sleep at night in Palm Beach County that their kids are safe here.
There were some musical chairs, as you brought up, when they all switch parties, or most of them switch parties just to make sure they make it in.
Thank you. I have never seen a race in all my years of covering politics where three of the four candidates switch parties at the last minute. It doesn't smell right to me, you know. They gave fairly convincing answers, I must say, to the idea of wanting to open the election to as many voters as possible. And so we have this oddity of having four candidates for sheriff on the November ballot. It's going to be interesting. But as we pointed out in the debate, nobody's going to get 50% of the vote in this crowd.
What's the takeaway did you get from either their responses or one of the questions that you brought up to them? Like, what stuck out to you for this?
There were a number of calls for new leadership. This is a referendum to some degree on Mike Wood. Okay, he's been the sheriff for a little less than 2 years, but he is the duly appointed sheriff of Leon County by the governor, and so the race is going to come down to whether people are satisfied with his leadership or not. And it's going to be, you know what? It's going to be a very high turnout presidential election. And Ion Sancho knows how to get the vote out in Leon County. So we're going to get 80% of the people in this community are going to have a say in this race. And that's the way it should be.
So who do you think is in good shape so far? As we know, it can all change.
I really don't know. This is a by-party registration. This is a strongly Democratic community. There's only one Democratic candidate, and that's Walt McNeil. And so, however, you know, there is such a thing as racial politics. We have two African-American candidates, and they might split the black vote. So I really can't tell how it's going to happen. And the other thing is you've got to give Mike Woods some points because he's the incumbent.
And that again is Steve Bosquet with the Tampa Bay Times Miami Herald Capital Bureau, taking time to dive into some local politics. There's also the superintendent's race in Leon County. That's one to watch. Again, let me know some of the races you'd like to learn more about, whether it's South, Central, or North Florida. We'll get those candidates right here on the Rotunda. Until then, that's it for this edition of the program. Oh, wait. Oh, Florida. Here's a preview of what we'll be talking about next week.
But I also mentioned a lot of the current events going on in Florida certainly bear the mark of wackiness we've been known for. I mean, consider our U.S. Senate race right now. You've got one candidate who sacrificed a goat and drank its blood. And I asked him what the goat's blood tasted like, and he said it tasted like fame. You've got another one who accused his wife of committing bigamy, and the bigamy trial wound up being delayed at one point because her breast implants were leaking. And, you know, you've got a third candidate who's been accused of padding his resume. Another one who is, you know, has been in the news for driving tremendously high rates of speed with his car and then saying, oh, but it's safe because my car is really good. And then, of course, you have the incumbent who swore he wasn't going to get back into the race and then he did.
That's Craig Pittman, author of the New York Times bestseller, Oh, Florida. You don't want to miss that episode. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and join us again right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.